This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Comic Book Noise listeners, you're in for a rare special treat. Not only do we have the full slate of our wondrous hosts, but we're back celebrating our themed episodes. And in this instance, it's the very first theme we ever visited when we took over the show, Halloween. Moo-hoo, ha 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 ha. Thunder, lightning, crackle, crackle, crackle.
My favorite type of episode, because you guys don't usually read horror, so I always love to see what you guys come up with.
And that was one quarter of our intrepid squad, Phil the Ottawa Otter. Say hi, Phil.
Hello. Sorry, I was on mute again.
I thought that was like his end gimmick where he doesn't say anything.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, late from battling the Yeti from the icebox, it's WWX Kev. Say hi, Kev.
Hello.
And we had to bribe him with all sorts of incentives, but from the comic book bunker, it's Super Steve. Say hi, Steve.
Hello. I feel like with Phil's comment, I realize how many episodes I've missed on this being on this show, because as I was trying to think of horror related stuff, I realized, oh man, but a lot of the indie stuff I read is horror related. So
well, no,
I,
it's true. You do.
When I'm on, I talk about, it's like, oh man, I talked about that. I talked about that. I should be saving these things for Halloween, Phil.
Yeah. You do have something today though, right?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Yes. It's our every 5 year Halloween episode.
Well, we had one last year, so but we did miss a few. Yes, and
did we?
Still salty. Yeah, we missed at least two or three.
Our very first episode was a Halloween episode.
Yeah, then we did another, and then you guys got lazy with it, and we had a Halloween episode in like January.
That's a good time for horror.
Yeah,
hopefully
this one will get done before January, but no promises, people. No promises. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can find old episodes of this show on whatever podcast catcher you're using, or you can go to the internet and look up our website, Indie Comic Book Noise. Indie is INDIE. You can go all the way back to even before we were involved with the show, or you can just go listen to random episodes if you feel like it. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network, a family of so many podcasts, I don't think I could even name 10 of them. But I'm guaranteeing you can find something on the Deliberate Noise Network that you'll want to listen to.
Hockey noise,
video game noise.
So the
Marvel noise.
We always give out thanks to Derek, who runs the show. As Steve subtly hinted at, Marvel Noise is a sister show you will hear some of us on sometimes. Steve runs Marvel Noise, and he keeps that show tight and family friendly, unlike this show where we sometimes have some adult language themes, concepts, and discussions.
You know, those families who like to do those deep, deep dives into, like, 70s Marvel comics.
Let me tell you something, Steve. There isn't a six-year-old out there that isn't waiting with bated breath for you and McDade to delve into 70s Tomb of Dracula. That's all they talk about, TikTok and Tomb of Dracula.
Tis the season.
As noted, we have some... I mean, as I always say, we don't really talk about anything that's too controversial or anything. I usually edit the stuff that Kevin and Phil say that's really spicy ends up on the cutting room floor. So
I think we've gotten tame in our age.
I know, but if there's boobies in my comic, I definitely mention it.
We need the rating again.
Our normal remit is just to throw out a property and we can talk about however we feel it relates. This can not just include comic books, but whatever adaptations, video games, ancillary media. Maybe it was made into a TV show. Maybe it was made into a cell phone cover. I don't know.
Sometimes we talk about books we like, just normal books. Yeah.
Sometimes we talk about the industry. We do avoid those specific things that just relate to the big two.
Oh, and recently I found that loophole where I can talk about Wildstorm as long as it's the Image stuff.
Yeah, but as right. Phil noted, you know, look, Batman's teamed up with Archie and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all that. You can usually find some sort of end around to slip in a little bit of that tasty, tasty big two love. But generally, you know, you can go listen to Marvel Noise and all the related properties if you're more into that. But, you know, comics is one big happy family. Everybody loves every single comic that was ever made. So who are we to say we can't talk about it?
No secret wars in comics.
However, in this instance, we're a themed episode. Woo-hoo, ha ha ha. If I was better at editing, I would insert some sort of sound effect there.
I'll do that later.
Yeah.
Oh, hello there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to edit that out. Great. Yeah. So here we are. Halloween, boys. That time of year. When the thermometer...
Do you think Dracula uses TikTok?
When the thermometer dips down to the low 80s, in my instance.
What? Drac talk.
Southern California is pretty warm still in September and October.
You're still on fire is what you're saying?
Yeah, it was almost 100 today, boys. So enjoying that balmy fall weather.
Well, I think we got rain, hail, and flurries today.
Yeah, we got a little bit, but not much. It's very small.
For those of you listening in the future, we are currently still experiencing the effects of COVID. So there might be limited trick-or-treating this year for some of us, but we have our tricks and our treats between the pages of our beloved comic books. So who wants to start us off with anything and everything? Wide open floor, gentlemen.
Well, I think our guests would go first.
The sad thing is I know that you're referring to me.
Yeah, we all do.
I helped found this show for Pete's sake. Well, at least our tour of duty on it. All right, I got something for you. It was a Kickstarter, I think, a few years ago now. It took a really long time to deliver on the actual books, although the extras came out some time ago and the communication was good all along. So it was a tolerable length of time before the campaign manager delivered. And this is Mort Todd's Monsters Attack collection, volumes 1 and 2. These two volumes are magazine sized. And the covers on them have like a, I don't know, like a polyfiber tooth to them that makes them just a delight to hold. It's almost like holding like an old wax pack of a pack of trading cards or something like that.
You remember that Swamp Thing hardcover where it's only the first one had the swamp paper?
Yeah, it was like tacky almost, right? Yeah. Well, Mort Todd was, like, in the 80s, he was a young go-getter in his early to mid-20s. And already then, the successful either editor-in-chief or publisher, I forget, of Cracked Magazine. You guys remember Cracked?
Yeah, I loved Cracked.
The mad competitor, the best of the mad competitors, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they had the mascot guy who was, like, the little, like, painter or janitor guy.
Well, I think I liked Cracked as a kid because it had less of the political stuff. Because I didn't understand that when I was younger.
Yeah.
Would
I remember their Star Wars parody, because Obi-Wan Kenobi uses a Helen Reddy mask to scare off the Tusken Raiders.
What I liked about the magazine was there was lots of John Severin art, right, throughout. That was great. And one of the things that Mort Todd brought to the magazine was a lot of features on monsters. He loved the Universal Monsters and the old EC books and artists and stuff. And the monster stuff was so popular and cracked that they made a spinoff regular. I don't know if it was published bi-monthly or quarterly or whatever, but it was like Cracked's Monster Mash or Monster whatever. And it was all cracked monster features in the whole magazine. So he wanted to publish a monster magazine of straight up, like E.C. Warren style monster stories in black and white, but the upper management wasn't going to go for it. So he on his own for free wrote a whole bunch of stories to be material, and then sort of on the sly kind of commissioned them a little here and there until he had the material and was able to publish a few issues of Monsters Attack before he was caught. And the whole thing was put to a stop until the sales numbers came in. And they saw that the sales were so good, they had Mort continue on with it. But by then, there were other things going on between him and the management that he ended up leaving a few issues later. So this is finally a reprint of this black and white material now, what, 40 years later. And this black and white tales by the likes of Steve Ditko, Pat Boyette, Gene Colan, Rurik Tyler, Gray Morrow, Alex Toth, and of course, lots of John Severin. It's great. It has all the articles, too, about some of the different monsters, and there's a Mars Attacks project that focuses on Norm Saunders' art and stuff. And even cooler, my copy is signed by Mort because I did the Kickstarter. Oh, and nice. My name is in the back in really monsterific, scary, like, font. on a big gravestone with the other Kickstarter backers. And in my column, just five names down from me is Vince B.
Oh, cool. Do these come to print for the rest of us, or do you have to be a Kickstarter?
They already are in print. Okay. I think Charlton sells them, but you can also get them right from Amazon. Okay. And if you go to morttodd.com, two Ds, he's got a page that has all kinds of example art, and it's actually a really nicely displayed web page to show you what this material looks like. And it has links right there that send you to Amazon where you can buy it. He might sell it digitally too, but it's great stuff.
So are these mostly like the old timey O. Henry endings, or are they more tongue in cheek or a mix, or?
You know what? It's a little of both. Like, there's some really trippy Ditko stuff. Like, this is a Ditko story that starts out with just this robot falling to pieces and then trying to put himself back together. And he's, like, having this weird existential thing happening where he's, like, can almost make out this bearded figure in the distance. But then he's, like, falls back apart and he pulls himself together, and then he's a man waking up and it's a dream, but then he falls apart and it ends up being that he was a scientist and the bearded figure is the other scientist, and the guy like dies in a lab accident, and the other scientist doesn't know if his brain is conscious or not, but he tries to keep it alive with some like serum in a jar, Kev, a floating brain.
Whoa.
And this is like the story is you're getting what that brain is experiencing, which is this falling apart and trying to, you know, it's just stuck on some subroutine loop of what its consciousness. It's crazy stuff. So there's stuff that borders more on science fiction, but it's mostly horror stuff. I would say it's more in the vein of the Warren material from the 70s.
You think Drac was into Beta?
Maybe Frank Langella Dracula. That was from Beta Time, wasn't it? I'm a lover, not a biter.
I don't know. Maybe they're all classic retro vampires. Like Frankenstein doesn't really, he's not really up with the, with all the modern tech.
He's the most techie of them all, isn't he?
I don't know, would he be?
Unless you mean chemical tech, then it would be like Dr. Jekyll or the Invisible Man. What are you getting at, Kevin?
I don't know. I don't know. It must be the...
Is this Kevin or is it a pod person, Kevin?
It's a pod person. Oh, jeez.
Is it time, Kevin, for our Michael DeForge segment?
How did you know I was just pulling that out? Wow. Andrew, that's creepy.
Yeah, who could have possibly have guessed that,
Kevin? So I don't know why I didn't pick this one up. What's the name of this anyways? I don't see a name on the cover.
Wait, how could you have didn't pick it up?
Maybe the name's on the spine.
Oh, wait, the name's on the spine.
Whoa, never mind. Look at that. It's the White Album of Indie Comics.
I don't know, for whatever reason, I never picked this up but at a TCAF or whatever. But it has a spine, Stunt by Michael DeForge. And there's another name on here, too. Oh, that's the publisher name. Koyama Press. That would make sense. Anyhow, this is... Let me compare it here. It's wider than your regular trade paperback. But, like, the size is, like... Maybe this is a webcomic. Because the size is like what, like bigger than you, like a social media size, but.
Is it like a 4x3 kind of thing?
I'm thinking like it's as wide as like an iPad or like, but it's not tall.
Is that an iPad mini, an iPad Pro, an iPad?
Yeah, there's a lot of different kinds.
It's a third generation, a fourth generation with the cover.
You would think that this was like three panels or whatever, like old comic strip sort of size. Like very widescreen.
And yeah, there's nothing on the cover. I'm still trying to get past that.
There's a red vines. It's like you see those Tool music videos where like they have the weird creatures creeping around out of the place, and then like red veins are like popping out of people's bodies and stuff is going on. It's like the X-Files, and you're not, it has like that creepy 90s-ish thing. And you're like, I'm not quite sure what is happening.
Creepy.
It's sort of like that. Like there's some kind of flesh moving around with weird squiggly sweat, like Ditko sweat. Well, not maybe. Maybe
are
more.
Are we still on the cover?
Sweat coming off of something here that's wearing. It's a person, I guess. It's a person.
I think Kevin might be a disembodied brain in a jar, with only half. The jar is only half full, though.
I put the drugs inside. I'm after the. Absolute High. Man, that was cool. I should reread that.
So someday. is there a narrative to this thing, or is it...
There is. Because this is called Stunt, so it's about a guy that's like a stunt. He does stunts. Like his whole thing is to be in Hollywood, and he's a stunt double. But he also... I guess it's also a bit of a stunt to be a body double for someone too, right? And it has an underlining thing of about this guy trying to commit suicide. And it's like, well, it never really took. So it's like his constant battle with his body, I guess, to commit suicide. So kind of strange. Because he runs into this guy that's like his body double, so... That's what he gets involved in.
All right, you're doing better because I'm intrigued. This is sounding more interesting the more you...
Well, But what really makes the whole thing weird is the way DeForge sets everything out here, because his characters are rather elongated and grotesque looking, and you're like, is that supposed to be, is that guy supposed to be an animal? Or, like, what is happening? Like, it's some unnerving pile of flesh that's sort of winding its way through all these sequences. Like you would just have a regular person, but then he's like, oh, this guy's running, but he, like, compresses the guy's body into these wide panels. So, like, they would have to be distorted. Like, you can only draw... I feel like the size of the comic also is distorting the figures, because you're like, well, how am I going to draw someone drawing in a full, like, running in a full panel? So it's like they're squished to fit within the panel, which is just pretty odd. So anyways, this guy becomes like a body double for this other famous guy. And this famous guy's like, well, I want you to do all this stuff, like attend all these meetings, be me, basically. So he goes to all these social things, and then, like, later on, oh, and then they're like, there'll be stuff like, oh, they'll have some newspaper headline, and it'll be from the Toronto Star and everything. You gotta slip that slight Canadian
stuff comic in here, right? I'm out.
I know you wanted to hear that. So he goes to, like, all these things, and then eventually he's just like, this just totally ruined my career. And at some point, the guy's, like, on a talk show, and this is an indie comic. So the guy pulls down his pants and starts pissing all over the place. Because that's an indie comics do, right? It's long been established. The only problem is, after his popularity, the Hollywood guys, as popularity starts waning, some of these events start, leading to higher popularity. They're sort of like that counterculture popularity, like, or they think, that's a gag, like, you know, you're like researching some role, you're method acting. So strange. So things sort of keep on going in that direction, and there's some more suicide stuff coming up. I it's just weird. Like, he would talk about going to the end of the top of buildings, going to the edge, and not being able to, like, force his body to go over the edge. Stuff like that. So he's also really into, I guess this helps with the body double stunting thing, too, is maybe he'll just accidentally die in some kind of accident, right? Some stunt will go wrong, and then boom. Like, they'll be like, ah, oh, he went down in this great inferno or something, and it'll be, like, glorious or something.
Well, that was and our then, mandatory with all the... Canada coverage for the... You always got to slip in those Canadian publishers, Kevin.
Of course.
Sorry, I interrupted you. And then he goes down.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it. the other thing you can do is also keep in shape, you know, like wear your body out. Maybe you'll be able to tie yourself out and then, be able to pull off that one last gag, I guess you could say. So pretty weird, disturbing, but pretty enjoyable.
Is it the weird and disturbing part that's most enjoyable?
I think some of the contortions are pretty enjoyable here, too. And they have one of these movies that he's been, like, offered, and apparently he signed up for like, a 3-book deal, and they're like, ah, Well, if we just, you know, pull out of this thing, everyone will hate me. But the book is actually Bloodsuck County. And I can't help but think of Lovecraft Country now.
I thought of perverted stuff.
Of course you did.
All right. Well, that sounds like it's going to be waiting for its big movie adaptation any day now. Does it have a big sticker now, a Netflix movie in development on the cover, Kevin?
Maybe if it was animated like Adventure Time or something like, you know, like those Adult Swim type of, like I could see it be like, I can't imagine like you would do anything like this in live action. Like how would you even, I don't, it would just totally lose the thing. And this is all in like basically blue, black and white. So yeah, I don't, well, you never know. Netflix, they might be like, this is what the kids like, right? He was involved in Adventure Time, right? Option that.
Well, if we're doing foreign comics and it's time for me to put my foot in the door, so to speak, I'm only going to attempt this once and fail at that, but I'm going to talk about Slania, which, for those of us that just read it out, looks a lot more like Slain. S-L-A-I-N-E with a accent over the A. And this is one of the ongoing shorts in the classic publication 2000 AD.
Whoa, look at us.
I'm in particular going to talk about the collected tale known as The Tomb of Terror. Now, 2000 AD is an anthology series started in the late 70s, still going today. Unfortunately, almost every iteration I've read has been collected, where they take one, whatever the ongoing story is, and collect it. But it really is an anthology. I just don't get my hands on too many of the actual issues of it. It's easier over here to get collected editions. So I'm, in fact, reading this in a collected edition. The Tomb of Terror.
Have you ever seen those mega packs?
No, I don't. I did get, 1 year I was able to get the 2000 AD Free Comic Book Day edition. And I've seen one or two, but really, most of the time, it's these collected editions when I'd be at various shows and that sort of thing. And unfortunately, I am continuing my tradition of looking at slightly older stories because I'm, you know, not making it to the store. So this collects some tales from the mid-80s. So like I said, originally told in smaller segments, this is a barbarian character, a Celtic warrior. And we're going to have the writer and co-creator Pat Mills. And in this instance, we have alternating art teams. And it's a guy you may have heard of some of his early work, Glenn Fabry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is some of his first work. And then he alternated with David Pugh. They both have very similar and complementary styles. The addition,
any relation to the other?
That I don't know. It looks like Pugh, from what I can find out, was mostly stayed over there. Did some work for Toxic, Warhammer, did some writing, also did some other non-comic stuff. But Fabry obviously crossed over here in one of those waves when they were importing work. I believe the Hellblazer covers is probably his most high profile. For me personally, and I don't know if it's just my bias, I would say the highest profile artist that worked on I'm just going to call it Slain. I goofed up. let's not pretend I can maintain that for the whole time. Simon Bisley worked on it for a while. And for those of you that know, he does a very exaggerated. The story probably most familiar to me before reading a lot of this other stuff was The Horned God. And Simon Bisley worked on all kinds of books over here. I would say, didn't he work on Lobo and a few others? That kind of...
Not really my thing, but I would say Lobo is
His logo looked great. There's some stuff. I liked his Ninja Troll, Casey Jones, Raphael stuff he did.
So I'm doing a pledging towards a Bisley sketchbook from this last year, and am getting a color headshot inside it of a character of my choice. So with Bisley style and everything, I think I'm going to go with, I had a black and white similar opportunity a few years ago when I did Red Sonja, and he did a great job. But I was thinking of Man-Thing.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of Baron Zemo.
I think his Man-Thing would be really cool.
I have a bigger piece by him on my wall of Deathlok.
Oh, yeah.
So, I gave him a choice of characters, and when he saw the Deathlok, he's like, oh, I want to draw that guy.
But neither of him nor the artist here were the artist co-creator. But I just associate Simon Bisley. And like I said, that could be my U.S. biased perspective. Right. But the edition I'm looking at for this Tomb of Terror, black and white, and Fabry, from the intro, Pat Mills talks a little bit about how Fabry was a little bit slower, but Pugh steps in admirably. I mean, they start out with Fabry, and the detail in these comics is just exquisite. I would say Slain is he's basically a Celtic barbarian, so think Conan the Barbarian, basically, for attitude. The significant characterization differences is Slain maintains a connection to his tribe. He's always kind of representing them, as opposed to Conan, whose allegiances shift from whatever era you're looking at. Additionally, he tends to have certain weapons, named weapons, that he'll use for a significant length of time, where Conan's just, you know, going through whatever he's got. Mm-hmm. And then the last would be that Slain, he's still a barbarian and doesn't himself use it, but he's kind of more accepting of magic in a way. He goes into this fun warp spasm, which is kind of like a berserker mode where he physically transforms. You can see how Simon Bisley would be great at that, taking a muscular character and making him kind of monstrous and frightening. And also, you know, his tribe is sometimes protected. He doesn't, like I said, he's not the shaman or whatever, but he's not going to be, like, grossed out by magic or whatever. And the same way Conan always had that disdain. Now, Slain, just like Conan, just wants to kill things, drink, and be with women, and those sort of, less into the, and also like Conan, not really into the treasure, like into it for what it can get him, but never really, like, you know, sometimes you're broke and you need to go loot something, but he was not driven by that.
As you do.
So those are, I would say, the big characterization differences. Other than that, it's Conan. So the Tomb of Terror has him and his crew going in, and there's some evil god who's going to get resurrected by sorcery. The evil god is going to wipe out all life on the planet and drive everyone crazy. And then leave the planet. And initially, Slain's like, oh, he's going to leave? I don't care, until the people with him are like, oh, no, he's going to kill everyone here first. And he's like, okay, I'm going to kill this guy. And I love the aesthetic is kind of like this particular art team make him almost like kind of a sneering, imagine Conan, but with like a Billy Idol kind of sneer to his face and kind of spiky hair. And also a lot of exposed muscly flesh, but some kind of leather armor at various places. And the other aesthetic thing I like is I really like on their swords, they're a mix of futuristic, but also all kinds of bizarre notches. So instead of a straight line, like there'll be weird little cutouts and bumps and everything that give it a great, like I doubt they're practical, but they're a wonderful visual aesthetic.
Like pumpkin knives when you carve pumpkins?
Even less, like just like a random, like a triangle edge on one and then like a hook in the middle. So it has a sword, but there are various kind of cutouts and extensions on it that look pretty cool. And like I said, I don't know how practical it would be in a fight.
Well, it'd get caught on the body and stuff, yeah, wouldn't it?
But it looks, you know, this isn't a documentary. So the other thing I love is, much like a classic Conan tale, he starts with a large group, and over the course of the adventure, not everyone's going to make it out of this. So. Yeah, that's... But he has a regular sidekick, this dwarf, Yuko, who's obsessed with treasure and kind of a snarky little guy. Pat Mills injects his kind of freewheeling sense of humor, and because it's originally anthology, the story is told in, like, you know, small segments, so he tends to have a few zingers here and there. Those may or may not work that great for you. I could do without him. I don't really hate him or anything, but it doesn't do much. But Fabry's detail is excellent. I mean, these temples and the monsters, you're just, I know where the time went. Pew, I think, is great, very complimentary style. A little less detail, but it's not like you wouldn't. Sometimes I had to check which one was, I mean, I could usually guess, but it's not so jarring when you get to the next guy. I'd say the one thing about Pew is sometimes the anatomy is a little bit odd, but I actually don't mind with the barbarians. Like, I'm not, I don't need him to be realistic in a way.
Like, well, you hit it right on the head. Like, it's, his work is very visceral, including like the anatomy and perspective and stuff. And Fabry has more of that detail that you speak of, where, you know, like when I got a Fabry sketchbook opportunity with the same thing, a head sketch in it, I had him do a Galactus and he killed it.
Oh yeah. That killed. Kind of, cause it, this god is like almost a Lovecraftian, with like spikes for teeth and all kinds of, almost reminiscent to me of another 2000 AD character, Nemesis the Warlock. So that right. kind of freaky subhuman. And there's all kinds of different races of men that look of different varying monstrousness. And like I said, as the crew descends into the temple, like, they lose a person here and there. And the other funny thing that works or not is that after a particularly bloody battle, Slane likes to create a small verse celebrating his prowess, which I think is kind of funny. I like that it has that, like I said, that Conan sensibility of, I'm just going to wander around and kill things, and also not gentlemanly. Like, he's kind of out for himself and you get what you deserve, which is always fun. Like, in one instance, there's only one bed, and he kicks someone off it, and the girl is like, oh, thank you, and then he takes the bed for himself, because he's not going to follow that kind of BS chivalry type of thing that you would think from some of these sword and sorcery types. So I really enjoy, like I said, for me, it's old-school barbarian versus a Lovecraftian creature, and their willingness to kill the sidekicks and everything. And this one, he ends up running into one of his long-standing bad guys. So as they go in, they're going to defeat this god, or they have to. And so part of that is, and then on his heels is one of the guys that he has fought before, this Elfrid. I want to keep saying Elric, but it's not Elric. And again, so some of these are just subhuman creatures that take human form so we can fight them. And one segment I enjoyed was right near the end, a dragon glamours one of his compatriots and devours him, but the blood left behind enchants the soil, and so the wizard is able to give them runes kind of on their face to protect them from the god and going crazy. Yeah, just that kind of, like I said, so he's just wants to kill, but he's not adverse to using the magic to do it. And there's also a fun segment where they end up in a trap where it appeals to the seven deadly sins. So one becomes slothful, one becomes gluttonous, and yeah, just the...
Is that your Halloween spin?
Yes. Well, the Halloween spin is the Tomb of Terror. And the fact that they're facing this god that drives everyone crazy, And it's a beautiful, you know, they don't have a lot of double page spread, or sorry, full page spreads. But, you know, when you reveal these creatures, you do.
I don't know. Sounds it's not passing the fill test.
So
For Halloween. It does not.
So the monster, Halloween. And no surprise there, even though his enemy wipes the runes off his face, he's still able to defeat the bad guy and drives the bad god crazy, who immolates himself and sends them off on their way. The few that have survived the conflict. And I'm just saying, it's really fun if you like blood and violence and Lovecraftian creatures and all this. And in this one, doesn't have any of his warp spasms or anything like that. There's also been time travel stories with the character. So you can really do a lot of weird, you know, those barbarian characters are very resilient because they're not introspective at all. You can put them in whatever situation and they don't really change a lot. So they're fun to see that way. And like I said, it was different to have another one. I always enjoyed those savage sort of Conan type stories. So to see a variation on that character was fun for me. And the Tomb of Terror seemed like it was, you know, kind of scary.
And I always like when there's like a group going on a journey like that together.
Like sure,
a fantasy setting. Yeah.
Especially when they're willing to kill a few, you know, there's stakes there. I mean, obviously the main guy's not going to go or whatever, but you don't know which ones are going to make it through to the other side or not. But in this one, he often uses his main weapon is frequently an axe called Brain Biter. But in this one, he gets a sword he deems a Blood Prow and makes a little verse about how it how it cuts through people and leaves death in its wake and everything. Yeah, like I said, just if you like that with a slightly different spin on your barbarian, I would suggest any of these. And because they're that modular thing, you can read any of these stories. I mean, maybe one of the characters is dead or not, but I feel it's all... like I said, like Conan, you can read it in whatever order. If you wanted to read Conan the King first and then read his adventures as a thief, or I don't think you're really going to be spoiled or have the experience ruined, but feel free to disagree.
He became a king?
Exactly. So I feel like those are, you know, because... he has a lot more roles like that I don't think Slane quite... because he always keeps his connection to the tribe. It's not like he's going to have his period as a thief and a period as a mercenary and a period as a pirate and all that stuff quite the same way.
Does he cross over with Judge Dredd, do you know?
I would not be surprised if they threw him in there. Like I said, that lack of introspection means that you can... and the use of magic means you can throw him into any situation... and that absurdity sort of is armor against that. You know, it's not like he's going to go back and think, oh my gosh, what the future is like. Or, you know, he's just going to go back to drinking ale and splitting people in half.
Splitting people in half.
Yeah, this is violent. And I love that they are not afraid of all of a ton of black. You guys know in my black and white comics, I love when... the background value is the black, especially when they're in these tombs and tunnels and everything. And then they have to do a little bit of the white shading around the character almost. Yeah. I love that you can have a black and white comic and have black be the underlying value. I mean, I don't know how that reproduced in the comics as they were coming out, but in these collected editions, it comes out great. It's just solid black.
Is there blood and guts or nudity or anything like that? Or is it, what's the sensibilities
Loads of gore. Like they are...
like disembowelment?
Yes. So he cuts off heads and literally cuts people in half.
Awesome.
And zombies and the one person gets eaten by the dragon. So there's all that. I don't know. I think some of them might have nudity. This one does not. I've read... a bunch of these adventures, so I can't say for sure that they all don't, but I think some do.
I just couldn't remember where 2000 AD drew the line.
I mean, to be honest, it's probably just as much male nudity as, you know, these barbarian types aren't big on necessary a lot of armor and clothes. And he jokes with one guy about that who's found this beautiful helm. And he's like, yeah, wearing a helmet. Seems like you're afraid you're going to get hurt. Because obviously, you know, the barbarians, the part of the warp spasm and the craziness was they were, you know, going into battle unafraid and willing to die.
And half naked.
But yeah, Glenn Fabry and David Pugh, their early work, like I said, mid-80s. This is, you know, 85, 86, something like that. Tomb of Terror, the collected edition of it from the different progs. I would have no objection to coming across, but I just don't think I'm going to find 2000 AD back issues anywhere. Maybe I need to check eBay.
You might be able to find some of those Eagle reprints that were like in comic books.
I feel like that's not going to be any. I'm good with, if I'm getting that, I might as well keep with the collected editions.
Yeah.
If I can get those raw floppies.
That was when I first saw that material, was when those Eagle comics hit the stands. I was at a point where I was into, for the first time, maybe the regular monthly rhythm, or the weekly rhythm, I should say, of comics releases, and going like when, and kind of understanding that the, how the cycle was and how everything was staggered so that there was new stuff coming out every week. And I was pretty much buying every new number one of the indie stuff that I could find to see what was out there and what would stick and whatnot. And when those Judge Dredd stuff hit, those colorized versions of that original material, it was really, really fun, really fantastic. And, you know,
and Boland, now you're a millionaire.
You know, I know Boland from the Camelot 3000 at the time. So it was like, oh, cool, it's other Boland stuff.
Yeah, it was so awesome how we just raided all the... If you were talented, like, come on over and work for DC or Marvel or whoever. And
sure.
All right. So I have
time for your solo.
Yeah, I have some questions for you guys. I hope you guys.
Answers.
Yeah, two questions each. I always have fun doing this with you. I hope you guys enjoy it too. So let's start with Kevin. This is a super easy one for Andrew and Steve, so that's why I picked Kevin for it. What year did Warren Publishing start? Ooh.
Jeez.
Like, you guys must know that, right?
I just read the biography, too.
Yeah.
Probably some point during the 70s.
I know too much now.
They'll have to kill you.
Like, there was the this, and then there was the that. What are they counting as the beginning of?
That's right. You should be able to buffalo them, Kevin. Just keep adding qualifiers and...
Well, I'll let you say the 70s, if you
want. Yeah, it would be the 70s, and then I would just be guessing a random year, like 74?
Okay, well, it was actually 1964.
Yay!
Is that right,
said,
Steve?
I would have said 65, so.
Oh, really?
I would have said, like, mid-60s. Just as knowing it was around that time, not...
You read the book, so you probably know more.
I'm not being exact. I just know that it was in the mid-60s, around the same time that Marvel stuff was happening.
Oh, man, this means I'm going to get questions about 90s Image. From
well,
wow.
All right, Steve, this is a super hard one, but I think you're the only one who can answer this, maybe.
Oh, no.
Name three characters from Chaos Comics. I was going to say four, but I was like, oh, maybe I should just say three.
Evil Ernie.
Oh, four.
Wait, what?
Just because I'm too confident. I'm switching to four again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, start your answer with, boy, that's a tough one next time, Steve.
Lady Death, Evil Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one Belent drew with the Purgatory?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be another one.
There we go.
You might got me on that fourth one, man.
I'll give you a hint.
Can I use a lifeline?
Well, I'll give you a hint. Yeah, in your answers, there's another answer in one of your answers.
Isn't there another, like, lady demon?
You can answer that riddle.
What about, wasn't there, like, a panther or something?
Yeah.
But that was actually, I think that belonged to somebody else, and they just did a crossover.
I was trying to hint at Smiley, the button on Evil Ernie.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, but then I was like, no, that's Evil Ernie, isn't it? And I'm like, but no, that was...
That's a separate.
Very good.
All right, Andrew. What
Todd
company?
McFarlane.
Wrong. What company made Jason versus Leatherface a 3-issue series? It's multiple choice. Don't worry. Unless you know the answer. Do you know the answer?
I do not know the answer.
Okay. So
those
multiple
properties
choice.
Have cycled through a lot of different companies.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it like Topps or something like that?
You just answered Andrew's question.
I'm right? Nice.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. I guess you guys could all just answer it.
Who loves your answer?
Super Steve coming in with the rescue. What were the companies you were going to give us, Phil?
I was going to say Now Comics, Topps, Avatar, or Caliber Comics.
Now would have been a tough one. If I had heard the choices, I would have been 50-50 on that.
And then, all right. So, yeah, just I guess anyone can answer. Okay. So I'm going to name 4 different properties. And in the last 5 years, which one of them has not had their own series? Jeepers Creepers. Pumpkinhead. Hatchet. And Carrie.
Oh.
I don't know. I only recognize 3 of those. I've never heard of Hatchet.
Yeah.
Except for Hachet, don't they publish magazines?
That's right.
You think Carrie's had a comic?
Well, there was a reboot. The one I don't know is Jeepers Creepers. That I would have thought that would have been more than 5 years ago. I don't know if feels like it's a trick question. We're like, it happened 6 years ago type of thing. But I don't know Hatchet, so that would be the one I would have. I don't know what that, like I said, except for Hachette, the magazine publisher. I don't recognize that property.
Is that your final answer?
That's what I got to go with. I don't know that one.
Anyone else?
I wouldn't. I haven't read any of those in the last 5 years, so.
Well, you almost had it, Steve. It was Carrie.
Wow.
Because, yeah, Jeepers Creepers was maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago or so. Same for Pumpkinhead, both by Dynamite, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hatchet was by that company. They have, like, Mythology or something like that in their title.
American Mythology?
Yeah, that one. They do Hatchet. So I think there's a Halloween special coming out soon.
Is Hatchet a movie series or something?
Yeah, there's, like, 4 or 5 of them. It's basically just this big hillbilly with the hatchet. They're very popular because of their gore. It's all practical effects.
Hatchet 1, Hatchet 2.
So like he'll like chop people in half, and it's they're kind of comedy horrors, I guess, in a bit too.
I must escape. Never heard of it.
All right. This was mostly for Andrew because I know he's a fan, but anyone can go for it. Who played Ginger Dead Man in the movies?
Phil, you know I only read the comics.
I know, but we talked about this.
Who played? Well, it would be, isn't it like a animated thing? Like the character, isn't it CGI?
But what actor voiced him?
Gilbert Godfrey?
Gary Busey.
Oh.
That was a hard one.
That was
a
good one.
I just watched Point Break for the first time a few months ago. I've never seen that.
Point Break. Which one's that one again?
That's the one where Keanu Reeves and Gary Busey
are... bank robber and all that.
And
You only saw that for the first time? You're serious?
Yeah, I'd seen the remake on a plane.
It would be on TV like a million times a week.
Yeah, wasn't my bag.
Well, I haven't seen it in decades, but at the time, I loved it. And I used to love that actor who played Tank Girl. I forget her name.
Lori Petty, I think.
Yeah, I used to like her a lot.
What I enjoyed about it, I gotta say,
she did not age well.
Compared to the modern action movies, it's weird to just see everyone in good shape, but not in like super bulked up. You know what I mean? Like, they're all in good shape because they're actually, but they're not like, look like bodybuilders or whatever, like they do in all the modern movies. Everybody's,
it was a time like, when like the hero could have a pot belly.
Yeah. Or even just like, look like a regular human who's like, well, and oh, now he's in good shape. And
every frame can be manipulated now, right? I mean, you can take, you can make a, somebody who's pregnant, not pregnant in an action film for Pete's sake.
But I mean, all those people I think are also expected to like lift a lot more weights and just look a lot bigger than they used to.
Sure.
Like that was what, that was Arnold's hook, was he was like the big dude. And now they're all like, you look and like, oh yeah. You know, like I said, Keanu and Gary and Patrick, they're all in good shape, but you wouldn't think they're bodybuilders or anything.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it. I'm like, oh, I forgot back when everyone wasn't supposed to look like they did steroids and lived in the gym. Was that it, Phil? Did I fail on the last question?
No, no, you guys did great.
You're supposed to end with like an easy question so we look smart, Phil.
I thought you guys did good.
Like, you know, what's the big holiday that comes after Thanksgiving at the
It hurts my brain just thinking of those questions.
That's why if you did easier ones.
Andrew, it's funny that you mentioned the 2000 AD material because I just read some 2000 AD material too in collected form.
ABC 2000, Warriors?
2015 from IDW. It's a nice big hardcover. Judge Dredd Classics, The Dark Judges.
Oh. And
it's got a Derek Robertson new cover and pinups in the back and stuff. And specifically in the collection, the first two appearances of Judge Death and Judge Anderson.
Who, you mean the Batman who laughs?
She's the, right. And Judge Anderson's the female judge from the Psy Division. Yeah, right. Those two stories are Judge Death and Judge Death Lives, both by Ron Wagner and Alan Grant with art by Brian Boland. And in this version, it's also really smartly colored from the original black and white. It looks really nice. And the story is great. I mean, Judge Death infiltrates our dimension. And in his world, the judges have decided that, you know, there's not going to be crimes committed if life is wiped out. So life became a crime and the judges wiped everybody out and now they're coming into our dimension. And he possesses Judge Anderson and she ultimately tips off Dredd to suspend her in this like amber like substance called Boing that had been previously introduced in an earlier story that's not in this collection. And then he's trapped within her because she's trapped within the Boeing forever. And then she's kind of like put in this little museum and honored for giving herself and her life to her duty to keep Judge Death trapped. And until the next story, Judge Death Lives, where she gets freed and then Judge Death escapes and he brings forth three of his like cousins from his world and they all have these really cool designs. There's Judge Mortis and Judge Fire and Judge Fear. So it ends up being like Judge Dredd and Judge Anderson teaming up to try to neutralize the threat and they have to go back to the dead world where the judges come from and everything. It's really cool. And the rest of the book has reprints of another sweeping Judge Anderson side division storyline that had Judge Death in them. And it's also recolored and looks really nice. But specifically, I just wanted to reread that old stuff because it was near and dear to my heart having read it like we just talked about in those old Eagle reprints way back when. And I'll tell you, that old newsprint hasn't held up at all. and this, looking at it on this nice oversized and nicely colored, they really did a good job.
I always felt the setting for that was just as good, if not better, than Judge Dredd anyways. Like, Mega City and the judge systems and all that. Like, it's a really fun world. Like, you don't need Judge Dredd. Yeah, fun. Fun to read. I mean, I don't want to live there.
Fun. Fun place.
But it's so, like, I love that the heightened reality that they're in means you can take it in very any kind of extreme direction. You can make it absurdist. You can make it extra violent. You can do whatever you want with it. And that environment is resilient enough to take the story in that direction.
It's Gotham, right? I mean, you can tell all kinds of great stories about all these other characters that are in Gotham, and you can do serious or horrific or comedic takes on it and everything, but you still need Batman in Gotham, and I think Dredd still has to be there. And even though, like this second story, the Judge Death Lives one, where they go back to the dead world and everything, at the very end, when Judge Anderson does the finishing move that solves the predicament that they're in, Judge Dredd is impaled against the wall with a flaming pitchfork in his arm, and she's like, "Ah, the threat of the Dark Judges has been ended forever." And he's like, "Well, it's still pretty affecting me right now." He's like standing there bleeding with this pitchfork, flaming pitchfork stuck against the wall. And that's, you know, Batman's role in a team book, so to speak. And I almost think of these Judge Dredd stories as team stories, because it's usually not just about Dredd, but about some other people, and Dredd's there too at times. And I think he works really good that way.
Yeah. I feel like he's a little one note sometimes.
Yeah. So that helps. Yeah.
So is Batman, you know, but he manages to stick around too, you know?
Yeah.
He's an inventor and a millionaire.
Steve, what about emo Batman? You have all those emos he's emo. And
you don't have to have that conversation.
And as Kevin
what about
said,
when he smiles, when he successfully pulls off a mission?
Batman who laughs. How dare you, Brian. Kevin, suggest there's any similarity?
Well, there's no similarity. Comes from a dead universe, comes into our universe. Did he flip the map over? but is Judge Death a bad idea, though? That's the thing I don't know.
What? That's a cool idea.
I know, but a great design. Batman Who Laughs is a bad idea, and they know he's a bad idea. That's where they might diverge.
Do you mean story? He understands he's a bad. Like, is it like the Superboy Prime or whatever, where it's a commentary on?
Kevin, you know what else is a bad idea? That stupid Gwen Stacy Spider-Man you like so much.
What? You just don't like good stories. I don't know. Maybe you like the prim and proper Gwen Stacy.
Who's got an indie book?
I got one.
Wait, I thought we were talking. Isn't Batman indie in the stories,
Steve? It makes no money. We're good.
He makes no money. So I started reading, I don't know if my other one was approved by Phil as a...
No, it was I heard Suicide, or I don't know if that was Steve saying something.
Phil and I are going to start our own Halloween show.
It's true. You guys need a little something more here.
Phil tuned out when you said Canada.
Yeah.
that's why I have this, because I don't know if the other one was weird. And suicidal and everything, but I don't know if that's not really horror.
Well, I give you a break usually because you have a tougher time with it, where these guys, I know they have it in their collection, you know.
Yeah, I still don't know if this is 100% horror. Something is killing the children.
Yeah, that'd count it. I have that book.
So I've started reading this. I'm not all the way through it yet.
I read maybe the first three issues. I have the first trade there.
That's what I read, the first three issues.
it's such a good title, but I don't know anything about it. Tell me more. What's it about? What's the whole deal?
It reminds me a lot of like a young version of like Hackslash.
Kind of. I was thinking like the, what's her name? Her last name is Slaughter. Is it Emily?
Sergeant?
Let's call her Emily, right?
I don't remember.
Because they have blonde hair and everything, but more like a modern, like if Buffy had more like piercings and stuff. So I don't know. It reminds me of Buffy.
If I remember correctly, it starts off with this awesome scene of these kids in the woods, like at nighttime. And all of a sudden, this creature, like, starts tearing them up to pieces, and there's, like, one survivor.
Yeah,
it's... And then she comes to town and starts kind of helping out the kid that survived to try and get this monster.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, some kind of 80s horror type of thing.
Or she goes town to town, I think, helping out these different kids that get caught in this mess.
So totally, like if you're going to use a modern example, like, oh, Stranger Things meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, Hollywood would be like, yeah, I'm surprised if this hasn't been optioned or never gets optioned. Like, it just seems like one of those.
I could see this being a Netflix
or
something for sure.
So this is by James Tynion IV, Weatherer Del Dura. I'm not really
nice art.
And Miguel Maroto. Oh, and what's great about her as well when she comes to town is you see that, like, little thing she was doing 2 weeks earlier, and she has, like, the face mask, which I'm sure people, if this isn't an actual product, someone has made this. So it has like the teeth on the face mask. So like,
oh, that's been made, yeah.
So I'm thinking this is before, but I'm like, now it seems like that's totally one of those things. Like, I've seen so many different, like, Freddy, Jason, horror.
I wear a mask with Michael Myers, Freddy, Jason, and Leatherface on it.
Yeah.
I have The Simpsons sitting on a couch on my.
Yes. I have like comic book panels on one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, like Marvel, some Spider-Man eating fruit pies or whatever.
That'd be a good one, actually.
Eating fruit pies. That's pretty good.
Doesn't that describe like 8 of the issues or something that he's had, you know?
Yeah, so this begins where basically James is the kid that survives. And, of course, people at school and everything think, like, he murdered everyone.
So they just think he's nuts, basically.
Yeah, he's nuts, too, potentially. And then, of course, he runs into her. It's weird, though, because, like, I guess a few kids went missing and they're just like, whatever. And then now there's, like, this giant billboard when she comes into town with, like, all the people have been missing. But then, like, James is just walking, like, home or whatever by himself. And I'm like, you'd think they would be a little more concerned if, like, 14 kids have went missing in one city. Like, you'd think there would be a level of panic that, like, there is some, but it just, I don't know.
The something is the adults, so they just don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it just seemed a little too relaxed at times, even though it's like they're just like, well, this is the new normal now. Lots of kids have disappeared. Oh, well. Which is weird. But yeah, James obviously has issues with people and then with the whole murdering. So he sort of, like, gloms on to her when she's like, yeah, I'm coming to town and I'm going to...
Well, I liked how he wrote how gentle she is with him, because I think she realizes how he's being picked on. She's very, like, patient with him, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she's pretty patient.
Kind of, like, you could tell she would protect him and stuff.
And then, like, they go, like, looking for weapons and all this stuff. Of course, she, like... When she's plotting this whole thing out, like, someone else is like, wait, what's going on here? And then the cops get onto her. And I'm surprised she doesn't get into more trouble. But I think they can figure out that she knows what, she has experience, or she's not bluffing her stuff. So she sort of gets off on some things that I'm thinking other people or characters wouldn't. And then she gets like those mysterious phone calls, I guess, from her handler about where she's supposed to go, what's supposed to happen. I don't know. I imagine that will be like some future story element. And then she's usually talking to like this octopus. That's another weird
element. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
there's one scene where they come to her apartment door and like there's, I don't know, like Abe Sapien coming out of a flower with tentacles. I mean, that's the best way to describe it, which is like the stuffed octopus thing. Just weird. I guess it reminds me of those Temple Smith drawings from like that Wormwood Gentleman Corpse or something. Well, I would imagine that type of thing to
like cleaner. Well, I think it's a pretty good book. I would recommend it.
Yeah, like there's definitely familiar things, but it's well told.
Not a lot of action or anything, except for like once in a while there'll be a key issue, I guess, where there'll be some. But
yeah, there'll be
just some nice
basically work. Like everything will go completely black, and then you'll see some murders, and that's when the coloring will get. Like with the reds and everything, it'll get more lively. Like generally, I don't know what you would like. It's not it's sort of muted with some of like textures on some of the details in here. But well told, it's some things I wasn't expecting is like the layout of the pages. Sometimes it's like dragging your eye across a page. And if you don't have the book, like I imagine it was easier in singles to see the panel crossing the fold. So sometimes I would be like reading downward and I was like, oh, I was supposed to read across. Like it's been a while since I've had to pay attention to some details like that. Like I remember Ruse would do that every single issue, it would go across. But this is only occasionally. So great, great title name and, yeah, I'm going to definitely read more of this. I kept on hearing about it, and then with that title, I'm like, that seems like a pretty good thing. I'm going to check this out. I mean, Boom definitely has some interesting books within the last year.
All right, sounds good. Do we have any last things before we wrap up Halloween 2020? Ooh, scary.
Well, I would like if everyone can throw like a recommendation like last time of a media they like a movie or something horror related. If you guys have some, just try not to do something you did before.
Well, this one will be a little bit tricky, but if you're a video game person, it's an old game, but it's Eternal Darkness is the name of it. And I thought it was a really creepy game. You kind of, it's very Lovecraftian, and you have to be careful your character doesn't go crazy. But oh, it was nice. One of the really, it was fun. There's a gimmick to it that I don't want to spoil, but it's a fun gameplay element. But it's an older game, so I don't know if it's still around anymore. But it was really creepy, and you went back in time. You basically, your father, grandfather, someone dies, and you inherit this home. But everything is not how it seems. And as you investigate and go back into your family history, you discover all these problems and issues and everything. I think I played it through like 3 or 4 times to get all the different endings. Yeah, so if you like weird video games.
What systems horror, was that on?
It was it was the Nintendo GameCube is what I played it
on. Okay.
I'm not sure what if it got ported elsewhere or whatever, but Eternal Darkness. In fact, I don't have a GameCube, but I kept the game.
Wow. Yeah, I do. I do stuff like that.
I have a few. We have a few old games that we don't have the system for anymore.
Well, it's like my beta copy of Batman, right? Yeah. Like, why am I holding on to that?
I got a book about a card set that made for a pretty fun movie, and the book is from Abrams Comics Art. 2012. It's a 6-inch by 7.5-inch solid little hardcover, and it's Topps Mars Attacks 50th Anniversary Collection. this book is awesome. It's got the original 1962 55 card set with one card on each page, and the facing page is the back of the card. So you get like the whole card experience in one, you know, gatefold. It's got all the extra cards that came afterwards from subsequent sets and preliminary sketches by Bob Powell and Wally Wood. I mean, those original card set was, they were drawn by Powell and Wood, mm-hmm. and then painted by Norm Saunders. And looking at his paintings are fantastic. And it even has some of the edited cards that made it into when they wanted to tone things down. And when you see the little, there's like 10 or 11 edited cards. But if you look at their numbers, then you go back to the original set and you look at how bad the original ones were, how bloody or gory, or how many people were on fire or dogs were getting shot or whatever. You see, oh, I see what they were trying to do there. But it's, oh, and the dust jacket is a wax pack material.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
And it came with a wax pack replica that's just like a flat, you know, almost mm-hmm. like a piece of tissue paper inside there that makes for a good little bookmark.
I can still feel what those feel like, too, in my hands.
And when you take the wax pack dust jacket off, the front of the book is a piece of bubble gum, and the back of it is the bubble gum all dried and cracked.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's really good. It's a great collection.
That's nice. Touches. I like that when they do that with books. They put in those little extra bit, you know?
Absolutely. Little known fact, those pages taste just like the bubblegum.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
But that stuff, I mean, and it has a good text piece in it too, you know, kind of talking about the significance and its place in pop culture and stuff. Because this was, you know, the mid-60s, gory and somewhat like sexy, salacious at times, trading cards, which was fun. And they've gone on to make comics and stuff, but the movie was not too bad. And it was, what was really fun about the movie, it was casted with all these different stars from Jack Nicholson on down through this, so many different people. Every scene you're looking at all these guys, you know, they are, you know, they're just playing along doing the Mars Attacks bit. And it's fun.
All right, Kevin, last one.
I don't know. I don't know if I have anything.
Haven't they made movies out of mangas or anything?
Yeah, but like I feel like I've already covered.
What about something like you've read a lot of horror manga like Dragonhead?
Yeah, that was in a Humble Bundle recently. Or no, it's I think it's still ongoing right now. Yeah.
Well, that's a huge recommend for me, that series.
Yeah, that was a really good series.
Yeah, I dipped into one of them Humble Bundles, even though I said I was done with them.
Yeah, you can't stop. Just like Kickstarter, I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, just like AWA has a Humble now, and I'm like, oh, do I really need to try this out? To do my old, well, this is what I thought. And now I'm going to read a bunch of first issues and see if it's what I thought, just to keep yourself honest. Because you can't read or consume everything, so you have to make a judgment. But sometimes you want to dip in just to see.
Well, you also
keeping
need to
them
make
honest.
You need to make a recommendation, Phil. You can't escape with just putting us on the hook.
He did, didn't he?
I asked the questions.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Well, I recommend the streaming service Shudder. It's like under $10 a month, super cheap. And they have some great original TV shows or some great horror movies if you're a horror fan. Oh. Definitely worth the price. There's one of the best shows ever in the last couple of years is Deadlands.
Seems a risky name because, you know, if it ever gets canceled, all the articles will be like Shuddered.
It's been going for years. No, it's been going strong. It has a big fan base because for horror fans, you know, like it's perfect.
Well, $10 a month isn't bad.
It's not like Netflix where they're shooting up crap all the time, you know, just whatever they get the license for. This is like curated by fans, you know, like it's not as a big library because it's actually good stuff.
But I thought part of the horror fans things they like to see is like bad stuff, but they like watching bad stuff.
That's just some of I don't know. I don't like bad stuff.
Man, no, like, because they're like, this is so bad. It's funny. We're going to watch bad horror movies.
I've never been a fan of that as much. But sometimes, don't forget, I like the bad stuff like Ginger.
Well, Dog, that's true.
Because I actually like it, you know.
Around the mid to late 80s, there was times where I could walk through a video store through the horror section and pretty much felt like I had seen almost everything, you know? And it would just be some weird C or D level straight to video movie that would be like all that you could find.
Yeah. I miss those days of walking through those sections or the sci-fi section.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right. That's Halloween 2020, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy virtual trick-or-treating.
I'm doing the real thing. Forget it.
We're doing a
scam. I'm knocking on your door.
We're doing like
a stray. Whoa. Steve, keep your distance.
LA County has not forbade it. They just strongly recommend you do not trick-or-treat this year. I think the city of Beverly Hills has shut it down, though, I think. But your municipality may have separate rules.
Well, we'll see how the supernatural react to that.
Assuming Halloween, we get this out in time for Halloween, people. And if not, I hope you had an awesome Halloween.
Maybe we'll have another episode.
If this comes out in January like last year, I'm going to cry.
Or consider this Halloween 2021. Edit, delete as applicable. Phil, any final thoughts for the viewer and listeners at home? I don't know how you view this. It's an audio-only show. All right. Kevin, your catchphrase?
In 2020, read even more indie comic books. It's good for you.
I thought you were supposed to do it safely.
Oh, safely. Safely. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
With your mask on.
Yes. I know your catchphrase.
Or your face shield. Maybe you prefer that instead.
Stay safe, everybody. Thanks.
Later.
What is your claim to fame?
Well, I am the co-author of a beloved Halloween novelty record you may know as the Monster Mash.
I may know it, yes.
In 1962, I co-wrote the song, and it was later popularized by Bobby Boris Pickett. He's the man who sings on the record, but the concept behind it, the lyrics were mine.
So the concept behind it, basically you came up with a concept of a bunch of monsters having a mash.
Yes.
And someone else put that into song, or someone else wrote the lyrics?
Well, the backstory's a little complicated. Originally, okay. I had written the song, and I presented it to the studio, and they deemed it a little too controversial. They said the monster imagery was too sensational, too over the top.
Violent.
The audiences of the day just could not take it. They were faint of heart. You know, it was a different time, 1962. So they made me tone it down. They put me in touch with this man, Bobby Boris Pickett, who would be the face of the song. They made me rewrite it, revise it, tone all the lyrics down, make it more palatable to mainstream audiences of the day.
So it was maybe a little more gruesome, but then audiences have caught up with that, certainly, since
the version now, the sanitized version, that's the one everybody knows and loves. But it's not my original vision for the song.
You know what? I read about this, and I would love to hear your original version of the song, because you've always alluded to it, but you've never come out and actually sang it anywhere.
It's never gotten a public performance, and I would love to put it out there for everyone to hear, to experience my original concept for the Monster Mash.
Well, please, the floor is yours. I know I have a piano here and a drum machine, so yes. If I could give you a little backing track or something like that. I noticed you brought some young girls with you.
I brought some girls, yes.
They look to be about 15 years old apiece. Am I guessing about
the right
girls?
Ballpark.
Okay, really, I love that ballpark. I have to say, my favorite one. They tore down, what'd they tear down recently?
I'm not sure.
Fenway, something like
maybe.
That? Yeah, that was a good ballpark. This one's a little better. All right, well, let's hear it. This is the original Monster Mash, Leo Carpazzi, here on Comedy Death Ray Radio. Let's hear it.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly to my surprise, his trousers dropped right to the floor. With his bottom bare, he ran to the door. I said, Frankenstein, what's gotten into you? He said, my dick is hard and I need to screw.
He did the fuck.
He did the monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
It was a graveyard fuck.
He did the fuck.
That monster sucked and fucked.
He did the fuck.
He did the monster fuck. From my laboratory, I heard quite the racket. Deep in the castle, the vampires jacked it. The zombies all fucked in the graveyard grass. Wolfman wolfed down Frankenstein's ass. They did the monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
It was a graveyard fuck.
They did the fuck.
Those monsters sucked and they fucked.
They did the fuck.
They did the monster fuck. Oh, the beasts all fucked as the orgy spread. Bigfoot gave the headless horseman head. Swamp Thing jerked off in the castle moat, while Dracula gagged from the jizz in his throat. The fucking was wet, there was spooge like mad. Igor decided to fuck his own dad. The mummy let out a horny moan when Medusa's bare tits turned his dick to stone.
They did the fuck.
They did the monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
It was a graveyard fuck.
They did the fuck.
Those monsters sucked and fucked.
They did the fuck.
They did the monster fuck. Oh, but Frankenstein's bride was the biggest slut. Dracula got balls deep in her butt. She got titty fucked by a giant spider. Jizz made the streaks in her hair much whiter. She fucked every monster, come one, come all. Her three holes were filled like a bowling ball. And while monsters all fucked his undead bride, Frankenstein just jacked off and cried.
Now you should fuck.
Now you should monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
And do the graveyard fuck.
The monster fuck.
Those monsters sucked and fucked.
Now you should fuck.
Now you should monster fuck. One
now
more time.
You fuck.
Now you should monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
And do the graveyard fuck.
The monster fuck.
Those monsters sucked and they fucked.
Now you should fuck.
Now you should monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
The monster fuck.
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay. Did I do something wrong? Leave
the girls. Get the fuck out of here.
Okay. It's been a pleasure to be here and share my song.
Yeah, it has not. Leo Carpazzi.